We get things rolling by talking about the big story globally in sports, to say the least, and it's the failure of the United States men's national team to qualify for the World Cup after a shocking loss to Trinidad and Tobago. We're joined on the phone by our friend Martin Rogers of USA Today. And so, Martin, we'll cut to the chase. What happened to this U.S. team?
It was unbelievable. It was a remarkable campaign, Rich. It was one that had disappointment from start to finish. But the CONCACAF region that encompasses teams in North and Central America and the Caribbean is the most forgiving and easiest region to qualify from the world to the World Cup from. It allows 3.5 places to get to the tournament. The U.S. has qualified for the last 7 World Cups in a row. And even going into the last game, having won only 3 games out of 9 in the final round of qualifying, the U.S. was in a great position to make it to the World Cup. It only needed to tie against Trinidad and Tobago, the worst team in the group, which had only won 1 game out of 9, and it couldn't get the job done. A massive disappointment, and it'll be very interesting to see where U.S. soccer goes from here.
Now, as you wrote, this Trinidad and Tobago team was inspired by the attitude of the American team complaining during a practice session earlier in the week, and they didn't make any friends in this competition.
They didn't, and it just wasn't very smart. When you turn up to a small country, a country that has a proud soccer history, Trinidad and Tobago, but it's a small country of a couple of million people, they have nothing much to play for because they've already been eliminated from the tournament. The only way you can really bite yourself in the backside is by finding a way to piss them off. And that's exactly what the U.S. did. They turn up for training a day before the game, and there's water on the track that surrounds the field. Now, there's a couple of things you can do. You can decide to try and train elsewhere. You can just make the most of it and be like, okay, well, it's not ideal, but we'll just get on with it. Or you can act like a bunch of divas, and that's what the U.S. did. Bruce Arena was outraged by it. He spoke out about it. The U.S. started tweeting about it. The players were carried by team staff over this little bit of water instead of like splashing their way through it. I mean, for goodness sake, it was ludicrous. And this got up the nose of Trinidad and Tobago. The players were not happy about it. The coaching staff and the federation were not happy about it. And it inspired them. And they thought, you know what? We're going to show you guys a thing or two. You've come here, you've tried to embarrass us and make us look small time. All right, well, maybe we'll just mess up your dreams of getting to the World Cup. Exactly what they did. They were motivated. They played like the team that had everything to gain, and the U.S. had no answer for it.
And, Martin, you wrote about the fact that among the other problems with this team, there are some leadership questions, not only with Bruce Arena, but with Captain Michael Bradley. How deep do these leadership problems go with the American team?
I think the problems run from top to bottom throughout the federation, throughout American soccer, and it's problems that now, after this has happened, can no longer be ignored and swept under the carpet. Bruce Arena came in. He was seen as a very, very safe choice. Jurgen Klinsmann had been fired as head coach and was ousted after the first 2 defeats of the final qualifying round. And it looked like Arena was going to get the job done, but other teams very, very quickly worked out that the tactical system was not sophisticated enough to handle it if other teams just sat back and were content to soak up pressure. The U.S. just didn't have enough attacking force to break that kind of tactical opponent down. Michael Bradley is a good player, a fine professional. He takes his craft seriously. But last night you wanted to see the kind of rip-roaring passion from a leader that lifts people, that lifts the people around him, and it gets everyone realizing that everything is on the line here. And if they don't produce and if they don't leave everything on the field, then their dreams are going to get shattered. And that's what happened. And look, there's no lack of effort. It wasn't that the team didn't want it or that Michael Bradley didn't want it, but it just wasn't the right fit, wasn't the right mix of characters, wasn't the right approach. And it's a sad day. It's a sad day because American soccer has come so far. It's come an incredibly long way in actually a relatively short period of time. And this is a backward step. It's not going to crush soccer in this country. It's not all these kids aren't suddenly going to stop playing. But that progress that was being made, it puts a brick wall in front of it. And it just slows down the whole process and pushes everything back 4 years.
We're talking with Martin Rogers here on Downtown. This is a team that has what many feel might be the best American player ever in Christian Pulisic. But as you say, it's a team that's also caught between generations. Can you explain?
It is. Yeah, there's a lot of older players. Tim Howard has been an incredible servant for American soccer. He was brilliant at the last World Cup, and he's been a great goalkeeper for many, many World Cup cycles. Clint Dempsey, highest scoring American in national team history. Too old now. I'm sorry, just too old. And you've got to set out your stall one way or another. I don't believe in this concept of sort of, like you said, trying to flip between the generations and then have sort of a mix of young and old. Like, if players are past it, unfortunately, they do have to go. And you have to go with the best of what you've got. And you know, it's easy to say, oh, are these young players ready yet? Well, if they're the best players that you have at your disposal, you have no choice but to throw them in. But he really tried to nurse some of these young players through. Youngsters like Darlington Nagbe, DeAndre Yedlin, Kelly Acosta. They should have been at the front and center of this team rather than sort of trying to just sort of work their way in gradually. Throw them in. Let's see what these guys can do. If they can't do it, then find someone else. But it just hasn't worked. And it's incredible, really, that they came as close as they did. I mean, one more goal for them, the U.S. was in. If Panama hadn't scored in the 88th minute, the U.S. was in. But that doesn't change the fact that there were serious problems with this program for a significant amount of time, problems that needed to be fixed even if they had qualified for the World Cup, and most certainly need to be fixed now.
So where does the U.S. team go from here, Martin?
Where do they go? It's a great question, because this is a very strange confederation in that if you play in Europe, if you're a European team like England, France, Germany, and you suffer a catastrophic exit from a major tournament, it doesn't matter quite as much, because the continental championships in Europe matter so much, and they matter so much in South America too. And so, you know, if you miss out on the World Cup, you've got the Euros to look forward to 2 years from then. But it doesn't quite work like that in CONCACAF. The CONCACAF Gold Cup doesn't have anywhere near the same level of prestige as that. So if you're Christian Pulisic and you're looking at this, you're not going to have a chance to play in a major global event again for 5 years. He's 19 years old. He's coming towards his prime. There's a real risk that people like him start to drift away from the bond they have with the national team. Pulisic will still be playing for the US in 4 or 5 years, but it erodes the bond a little bit. If you'd have put him in a World Cup at 19 years of age, he would have been forever emotionally tied to that national team. But think of the exciting things that are going to happen in his career over the next 5 years. He'll be playing in the Champions League, probably quarterfinals and semifinals, playing huge matches in the German Bundesliga and the German Cup and so on. And every time he comes back to the US for a friendly against, you know, a small Caribbean CONCACAF team, or comes back for a Gold Cup game, it's just going to piss him off. It's a long travel, and it's not really going to feel like it's worth his time because it's not a huge, huge game. What does it do for the viewership and the audience? You know, all these fans who have grown up for the past two or three generations, just assuming that the US is going to qualify for the World Cup year after year, and it has. Now, there's a new set of youngsters. There'll be a bunch of 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds who this will be their first World Cup memory, and it'll be a memory that the U.S. was not in the tournament. They may find other national teams to love. There may be a lower standard of expectation on this national team when there should be a higher standard of expectation. It changes everything to a certain degree, and it's disappointing. It's not something that's irrevocably lost. Soccer is not going to suddenly go downwards and become the 10th most popular sport in America, but it's an opportunity lost. When you have momentum and you let it slip, that's tragic, because the U.S. had momentum, and the league has never been as strong, MLS, as it is now. And the quality of players that they have to call upon have never been as good. And despite all that, they found a way to mess it up.
Yeah, and the only folks who might feel as bad or worse than the members of the team and their fans would be Fox Sports, having spent a ton of money on the World Cup.
Unbelievable, Rich. I mean, there's a possibility that this Fox Sports deal turns into the worst deal in the history of broadcasting, and it's not their fault. But let me talk to you about what happened with Fox Sports. So Fox Sports bought the right for the 2018 and the 2022 World Cup simultaneously, 2018 in Russia, 2022 in Qatar. They get completely screwed over 2022 because, as we know, Fox is a major player in NFL broadcasting. And because of the insane heat that is in Qatar in the middle of summer, when the World Cup always is, has been ever since 1930, they changed it. So the World Cup in Qatar that year is going to be held in wintertime, right smack bang in the middle of NFL season. Okay, so that completely ruin things for Fox. So as a result, FIFA said, okay, we will also give you the chance to buy, unopposed, the rights to the 2026 World Cup. And that was really to stave off potential legal action from Fox. So they have that. And now they have 2018 that doesn't have the US in it, which is going to be catastrophic for ratings. It's still going to be the biggest sports event of the summer. There's still going to be a ton of people tuning in, but it will be a drastically lower number than would have been tuning in if the US had played in it. And can you imagine if the US had gone on a run and reached the round of 16 or the quarterfinal? All those ratings lost, all that money from advertising and different things lost. So here's the thing. The only thing that can save this deal for Fox now is if the US gets the right to host the 2026 World Cup along with Canada and Mexico. It's the favorite right now. It's really the U.S., Canada, Mexico bid against a bid from Morocco, okay? And the U.S. seems by far to have the strongest bid, but you never know in FIFA. No one thought that Russia was going to get given 2018. Absolutely no one thought that Qatar was going to get given 2022. Both of those things happen. Now, if Fox doesn't have the shining light at the end of the tunnel of a home World Cup, which obviously would do monumental ratings, if it doesn't get that, like I said before, worst deal in the history of sports broadcasting.
Major implications all around. Martin Rogers, USA Today. Always great talking with you, Martin. We appreciate you making time for us on short notice here this afternoon. Travel safely.
Thanks, Rich. Take care.